Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com. The only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interactive Media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and you are listening
to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Brigati on LiveParanormal.com.
Welcome to another edition of My Darkest Hour Radio right here on LiveParanormal.com and History FM Radio. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Been doing a lot of traveling, seeing a lot of cool places. Got a chance to check out a few movie previews and stuff that we'll get to a little bit later. I want to say thanks for checking out the show tonight. Glad you guys could be with me. Tonight on the show, we are going to have a longtime friend of the show, Father David Deerfeeder, who I've done a few events with, we've talked about. What's really unique about David and being in the paranormal field, I know there's a lot of people with concerns about religious views and whatever it might be regarding the paranormal. Some faiths don't believe in it and some do. He's actually an ordained minister, father from the ordained old Catholic church. We'll discuss a little bit about that. Besides being that, he is a multi-sensate medium, which has multiple levels of mediumship, of course. And he is a well-known paranormal TV personality, been on a few shows. One of the great things about having him on the show is we're talking about a couple of events that will be coming up that I've been talking about in October and November. One is the haunting on the Comstock Hills, and the other is the Motherlode Paracon, which are both going to be just incredible places to go. Definitely suggest you guys get on board and check that out. Get your tickets now. I know Doug is having a special on some of the Paracon stuff, so go ahead and check it out. We're going to talk about it right now, so let's go in the green room and bring David out and bring him online with us. So hold on 1 second. Nice. My computer is so slow. Hello, David. Are you out there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly. Thanks for joining us.
Cool.
I really appreciate it.
Well,
so how's everything
honor.
Up north? Is it cooled down up north, or is it still pretty hot?
You know what? I broke out my Mr. Rogers sweater this morning. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's pretty darn nice. Yeah.
Perfect.
So,
well, awesome. Thanks for coming back on the show. One of the things that we were talking about, one of the things I always ask my guests when they come on the show is a story about how they got involved with the paranormal. I know you're an ordained minister and everything, so that's a little bit of a different situation for a lot of the investigators that I've had on the show. But if you could kind of tell us about how you got involved into the paranormal, what will set you in that path?
Well, I'll try to keep it the short version. When I was three, I was having a surgery to have a kidney removed, and I died. And I had a pretty common near-death experience. I, you know, did the whole thing through the light. I got to meet my dead Uncle Jim, who was a really cool guy, and he, you know, he told me, "Sorry, sports, you got to go back." And so, so I did. And the thing was, since I was only like just barely turning three, I didn't have any idea that that wasn't normal. And so there was an association with the beyond that was just a normal thing for me. I had two aunts that saw dead people, and for them that was normal. My mother was not into that kind of stuff. She wanted a little more predictability in her life. But her two sisters were open to it, and they only lived a couple blocks away from us. I spent a lot of my time there. So there was this part of it when I was growing up that was just, I didn't know that it was different from anybody else's experience, you know. But
yeah,
I really didn't say yes to it so strongly until about 15 years ago. And I was used to it, but I guess I didn't understand that I had a mission within it. And I had a friend that came to me in a dream. He'd been dead about 20 years, and he wanted me to get a message to his son. So I did, and it turned out that message had a lot of impact. And so for a little while, about 3 o'clock in the morning, I was the administrative assistant to the dead. And they'd come dictate the message, and I would deliver it, you know. So I found that these messages had meaning for people. I didn't understand exactly how this whole thing worked, but I did understand that I really wanted to say yes to just being that vessel. And so one of the things that helps, I you know, you can tell me what your experience was. For me, I have a very wise friend who was a mentor for me, and she helped me understand how to have office hours, because you really got to kind of define how you're going to live this, or it's going to define you. And how to get, you know, a night of sleep, how to be able to tune in during the day. How to establish those boundaries, how to establish protection. So there's a lot of things that I learned from her. And it kind of a, you know, turning point came where it was no longer about having friends that I knew come to me in my sleep. It was about talking to the dead people that I met on the BART train riding from San Francisco to Oakland, or, you know.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
And I never would have thought I would have been that guy, you know. Like, I was riding, we had a ferry boat that goes from Vallejo to San Francisco, and I was on the back deck of that boat, and there was this little old grandma that, you know, little old lady that came on the boat that was a dead lady, and she wanted to get a message to her grandson that was sitting next to me. And so it was like, okay, you know, I'll go with this. And if you would have told me there'd be a time that I would be, you know, pulling a Teresa Caputo on the boat, I never would have believed it. But now,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's just what I do. And I did have kind of a funny thing. I flew to Cincinnati for a family wedding. And when I was on the second leg of that flight from Salt Lake City to Cincinnati, one of the flight attendants had two dead guys with him. One of them was his father. And his father really wanted to get a message to him that was a message that was a pretty significant affirmation for him. So I knew that the flight attendants were busy. I just wrote a little note and handed it to him when he went by with the beverage service, you know. Mm-hmm. My traveling companion said, "You realize that you are in an airplane telling the flight attendant you see dead people, and they are going to have a special car waiting for you at the gate." You know, I'm like, yeah, well, that may be. But next thing I knew, this other flight attendant came up to me and said, "Hey, do you see anybody around me?" You know, so
yeah, they're all lining up to get their messages.
That's right. So, you know, it's just one of those things that some people roll with it and some people don't. But I've really felt like it's been part of my ministry, because I'm getting a chance to help reconcile some things that people never got reconciled. And I take that responsibility pretty seriously.
Well,
so
that's good.
That's,
I mean, like
my
you said,
story.
It sounds, you know, a lot like a type of calling. You know, you become the messenger, and it might not always be that calling, but it starts with something and it kind of leads you into something else, I think, at some point. Let me ask you, when you started doing that, and you first, like the little lady you saw on the boat, and she wanted you to give her grandson a message. When you gave the message, how did that go? How did they react out of nowhere? There's a stranger in front of them giving them a message about their grandfather.
You know, usually when I have a message coming through for somebody, usually I have a little spiel that I give them first, you know. That standard, "Hey, listen, I'm a medium, and I, you know, sometimes I get messages from dead people, and it's a weird thing, but I just got to tell you, somebody here, I think, wants to give you a message. Is that okay?" And usually I have this little deal I do, you know, that kind of break the ice as much as it can be broken. But in this particular case, this lady was really wanting to get a message to this guy, you know. And so I just turned to him and said, "Hey, tell me about your grandmother." And he said, "Well, My one grandmother's, you know, got Alzheimer's, but my other grandmother is dead." And I said, "Yeah, it's the dead one." So I described the lady I was seeing and what she was dressed in, how tall she was, what her hair looked like, the little bag she was holding, you know. And I said, "You know, is that pretty much what your grandmother looks like?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, okay, well, she's on the boat with us," you know. And he was really moved by it, because and we wound up having a pretty long conversation afterwards, because the rest of his family was back east somewhere in Jersey or something, and he was feeling spectacularly lonely, and to find out that she was with him made a world of difference for him. So
wow, that's awesome.
I, you know, there are times when dead people can be really pushy. So I was at an Outback Steakhouse one night, and the waitress had her dead Aunt Mimi with her, and Aunt Mimi wanted to get a message to her. And I was with some friends, and I didn't really know if they were, like, totally down with this whole medium thing. One of them was you mentioned in your little opening intro there that some religions aren't really keen on this. And I knew she belonged to a religion that might not be real keen on me talking to dead people, so I didn't want to offend her. But Aunt Mimi was looking at me, and Aunt Mimi saying, "I know you see me." You know, and I'm like, "I can't talk right now." You know, she was a blast. She was funny as heck. So eventually I just said, you know, "I got to do what I got to do." And I asked the waitress about this lady that was hanging out with her, and she was her mother's sister, and gave her the message. And it was a good thing, but you got to be able to own your weirdness. You know, like anybody who's got something that's distinctive, it can make you feel weird. So you got to be really willing to own that. And that takes time, I think.
Yeah, I've met a lot of psychic mediums, and some are more experienced than the others. The other ones have always had that gift but don't really know how about going about it, and they start learning as you're going through. Oh, I can do this. I feel comfortable doing this now. Let me try this. You know, it kind of opens those doorways. And I think it's with experience we've learned how to approach people and how to kind of read people and get an idea of how to let them know that there's a message. Or even with the spirits, you know, like you're saying, being really pushy. You're looking right at me. I mean, are we going to do this or what? It's like, no, I can't right now. You'll have to come back later. And I've had a lot of them tell me that it's like that because they don't know what's going on. They're coming at you to get the message or tell the story, and it's, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're trying to go to bed to get ready to go to work in the morning. And you have to start setting those store hours. You're like, oh, okay, after 10 o'clock, I'm not going to talk to any of you guys anymore. Okay, it's my time. You know, tomorrow morning, you know, we'll rehash this conversation or whatever. But you have to kind of set those boundaries, I think. And a lot of people don't realize at the beginning of mediumship when they start doing that.
I think it can be very difficult to figure out how to set them. You know, I was really fortunate that I knew my friend Sadie, and that she could kind of walk me through that stuff. And so it helps to have a mentor. I know there's some schools that are around that I have friends that have gone to schools to learn how to do the spiritual work. And so that's good too. They get you got to have some foundation, because it's a very sometimes disquieting experience. So you really do have to keep yourself pretty well grounded. But you know, you're a master musician, and
well, it's
chances
not crazy,
are good. Man. Yeah, no, I'm pretty impressed with your work. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. And you get that way partly because you have a talent for it, and then partly because you do the work. You take time. You learn the scales. You learn the runs. You learn how to feel what's going on. You know, and it's the same thing, I think, with mediumship, that it's a little awkward at first, but then once you get the hang of it, it's really exciting when some new part of it opens up. You know, so one of the things that was tricky for me, though, was talking to my bishop about it. And
oh, wow.
Because
I
figured I had this new bishop. I needed to let him know what I did. And so I prepared this entire talk, you know. I said, could we go out for coffee? And I had a whole thing about how discernment of spirits is a gift, and how, you know, like in Catholic tradition, having connection with saints is not unheard of. So we have these ways that we bridge the gap. And I was laying out this entire thing so I could get around finally to saying, so I talk to dead people and they talk to me. Sometimes I see them, sometimes I smell them, sometimes I, you know, get a message from them another way. So I finally got all that stuff out, you know, like 25 minutes of prep work. And he looked at me and he said, I got people in my family that have those kind of experiences. You know, I said, oh, that's all? You know, like, then we're cool.
Yeah.
You know? And he was going like, yeah, you know, it's like, that's one of your gifts. That's one of your gifts. And so I said, well, okay, then tell me who the two kids are that hang out with you. Because he had these two dead kids that were always with him, you know. And when I described the kids to him, he told me he knew exactly who they were, you know. And it was, so it turned out to be pretty interesting. I got to get the okay to do what I do, and then also got a couple of questions answered that were bugging me, like, who are these kids that hang out with him? And they were childhood friends of his, so, you know. But at the same time, I think
cool.
It's important, you know, I've got this line of authority that's there as well as part of my spiritual protection. So a lot of folks like to do ghost hunting. And it's not that I have anything against ghost hunting. Some of my best friends are ghosts, but important that people learn to protect themselves. Because when you're messing with stuff you can't see, you can get hooked up with some stuff that's not so good. So I'm hoping that the people that are listening are pretty savvy and having, you know, some sense of protection, something that they have faith in that's positive and good, that's going to keep them grounded and protected, because it's necessary.
It's very necessary. So, and we, you know, it's funny. We talk about that pretty much in almost every episode that we do of the show, the fundamentals and the importance of protection, because we talk about going into abandoned asylums and a lot of dark places, and there's a lot of lost energy there, and it could just find you interesting or like your energy and attach itself to you and follow you home. So prepping is not just about checking the batteries and all the cameras. It's also about grounding yourself and protecting yourself. Like you said, by any whatever it is that you do that gives you that security and that comfort and protects you and what you have faith in is good. And it's different for different people, of course. But it's all about, you know, using that protection before you go in and then protecting yourself as you're leaving an environment, making sure, setting the ground rules, you cannot come home with me, blah, blah, blah. You know, whether it's smudging or whether you're carrying a rosary or certain prayers, whatever it might be, you know, do it before and after and make sure you set those rules before bringing anything home with you from an investigation.
Yeah, it's, you know, we got a couple pretty cool events that are coming up, and it's important to go into these new places, because some of the things that are coming up that maybe we can talk about in a minute are places I haven't gone to yet, you know, and it's exciting to be able to go to these historic and haunted places. But boy, you sure got to be ready for it. And I was at Preston Castle in Ione, California. It was a pretty cool place, and I was working there as an overnight docent. So I only got to do it a couple of times, but they would have people that would want to do overnight investigations, and so I got a chance to be one of the docents to help with that. And so we were leaving at like 3 a.m. The investigation had been pretty interesting, and it's a highly haunted location. And so I got to my car, and I'd only had this was in 2015, and I'd only had my car like a week. You know, I just bought a new one. And so I get in the car, and I had already done the whole, I used the prayer protection by James Dillett Freeman. Light of God surrounds me, the love of God enfolds me, the power of God protects me, and the presence of God watches over me. Wherever I am, God is. And that short little prayer is a real strong prayer for me. So as a group, we had closed the night, and we had said, you know, hey, you can't go home with us, stay here if you're, you know. And then I said the prayer protection, I got in the car, and as I began to pull away, the seatbelt light came on as though somebody were sitting on my seatbelt or sitting on my passenger seat. And I couldn't sense anybody there, which, you know, normally I'd be able to pick up on something, but it was a little spooky. I stopped the car. I got out. I turned the key off, took the key out, closed the door, locked the door, unlocked the door, got back in, started the key. You know, it was like, I'm going to reboot the whole thing. It's probably just a computer thing. And the seatbelt light comes back on. So I was really tired, and I thought, I'm going to go. I'll deal with this later. So eventually, you know, somewhere down that curvy road, the seatbelt light goes off. The next day, I get in my car, and half of the rearview mirror, this is in like, it was September, so it really wasn't like it was extremely cold here. Half the rearview mirror fogs over, and it's almost like somebody has put a line of masking tape down the middle. And I'm waiting for some finger to write, get out of the car, you know. But
yeah.
I'm thinking, okay, last night, the seatbelt thing, this, now this. So this car happens to be a VW Passat, so I go to the VW dealer that I bought it from, and I go to the service guy and say, hey, you know, here's the deal. I'm a medium I had a couple of weird things happen. And he said, well, you know, my sister's a medium, so, you know, I understand weird things. And what's happening? So I tell him. And he said, he asked me if I had an iPhone, and I said I did. He goes, well, do you put it on the passenger seat? And I said, yeah. And he says, I could go to any VW in this lot and put an iPhone on a passenger seat, and if I hit just the right spot, it will interact with the sensors, and that seatbelt light will come on. So the only thing that was happening there was your iPhone was sitting on the seat. And then he said, but that thing with the rear view mirror, man, that's spooky as hell.
That's crazy.
So you got to protect yourself. I still don't know what – I never had the mirror thing happen again. I'm grateful for that. So, you know. But we got some cool stuff happening and coming up here, my friend.
Let's talk about some of the events that are coming up, for sure.
Yeah, let's. You know, if we have anybody in the Northern California area that just can't make it to these events, I'll put in one plug for the Sassoon City Ghost Walk, because my group, Solano County Paranormal, leads that ghost walk one weekend every month. It's a lot of fun in Sassoon, outside of Fairfield, California. So it's S-U-I-S-U-N if people go looking for it. But for the big stuff we got coming up, you know, the Northern Nevada Ghost Hunters have got their event coming up, the Haunted Comstock in the Hills thing in Gold Hill, Nevada. And and then so that's what, the last weekend in October, I think, October 26th and 27th. And
That's going to be the last weekend of October before Halloween, and that is going to be taking place at Virginia City, which I'm up there all the time because I love that place, and we talked about it quite a bit on the show. Really looking forward to getting into more of that stuff, and Jadine, of course, said there's some new stuff on the horizon up there that we got to check out, so I'm pretty excited about that. But she won't say really what it is, but should be exciting.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
It will be exciting, and there's these two events coming up, and the groups that do them right. So, Northern Nevada Ghost Hunters, I love it when I get to be part of one of their events because they have cool locations, and it all benefits historic places, and besides that, Virginia City is just so full of dead people that it's just. You know, it is a blast, you know. So,
great for on so many scales, you know. There's so many good reasons to go there and check that place out, you know. Even just, you know, going through the neighborhoods and seeing the wild horses coming up the hill or spending some time in Virginia City Cemetery, which is huge. Because the town is it's kind of small, but there's a huge cemetery there with so much history in it and so much activity. It's really great just even being in there. And at the same time, the boardwalk up there, everything is super haunted, you know, from the fires, from the Yellow Jacket Mine incident. I mean, it goes on and on and on, and you just feel the presence there. And, you know, I was talking to Jadine on my show the last episode, and I told her it's funny because I feel real at home in a place like that, you know. It feels like I'm at home visiting, you know. It's just a good feeling, and I love the environment there.
I'm wondering if that's a common feeling, because that's exactly the way I feel when I'm in Virginia City. It's familiar, and it doesn't matter how many times I've been there, that I always want to go back. It just never gets old. So, and I've seen some stuff there as a medium that I haven't experienced in other places. So it's intriguing to me, you know. I get to expand my experiences. So a lot of times when I do these events, I'll get a message for somebody who's attending the event. And that's a pretty cool thing as well. But sometimes it's just fun to go see what dead people are hanging out and where they're at. And, you know, so I'm looking forward to that, Haunted Comstock in the Hills. I think their website is nngh.net. for Northern Nevada Ghost Hunters. So I know that's a limited amount of tickets on that one. If people want to jump on board, they better jump on board quick. And then we got that Motherlode Paraquest coming up with Douglas's NorCal Paranormal Investigators. And there's another guy that knows how to put on a good paracon. If I could just figure out how the heck to pronounce Mukalami. I know they call it Molehill, so I think I'll stick with Molehill. I think it is Mukalami, but I don't know. You know, it's like, but there's his event that's coming up, what, November 2nd and 3rd? It's going to be in Jackson, California, and you're going to be at that one too, right?
Yep, it's November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. We'll be up there in Jackson, California at the Motherlode Paraquest 2018. I got a killer suite at the Hotel Ledger, so that'll be good.
Oh.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm talking about the other place. Sorry. I'm at the National. That's what it is. The National, looking down the street.
Okay, yeah, I stayed at the National the last time I was there.
Yeah, that's nice, so why not? Got a fireplace in my room, so I'm happy. Not that I'm going to need it for any reason. I just know it's there, so I'm good.
Yeah. If it lights by itself, pay attention.
Oh, yeah. Unless I'm trying to sleep, that's when I wake up and I start yelling at them all saying, really? I'm trying to sleep here. Put that out.
Yeah. You know, it's so much fun to do these things. Like it gives a chance to meet some of the other folks that are involved in the paranormal, some that have a kind of a leadership role like you. And like Doug and like Jadine. Then you get to meet the folks who are just coming because they're interested in somebody that's there. You know, I was doing a walk one night at Mare Island, which is a decommissioned submarine base on the bay outside of San Francisco. And there was somebody that was on the walk.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it was always a fascinating place to spend some time. That was there from before the Civil War. I think it got decommissioned in the 1980s, so there's a lot of history in that place. A lot of folks that like to hang out there. And somebody had come there because it was on her sister's bucket list to do a paranormal investigation. And so she went along for the ride, and their dad came through to talk to them. So you just never know what's going to happen when you do these things. It's fun to meet the people that are real interested in it. It's fun to meet the people that are just dipping their toe in the water, and then it's fun to sit around and, you know, talk to folks that have got some significant experience. I can sit there and learn stuff. So it's all of that plus the history and the ghosts, man, what's not to love? So.
Yeah. That's why I look forward to these weekend getaways, just to go and see everybody. And it's, you know, we see a lot of the same people at some of these events, so it's almost like a family reunion. You know, what have you been up to? I haven't seen you since last year, blah, blah, blah. And then we talk about the places that we've always gone to, and then we talk about the new places that we go to check out, you know, and the experiences there as well. I do a lot of Doug's paracons. I see so many different ones per year that I had to cut it back a bit. And I got used to the group that Doug uses and the way he does things. And I felt really comfortable with it, so I started doing just the Doug stuff. And then Jadine hit me up to do the other ones, and I worked with Jadine at a lot of Doug's events and other events. So it's like it feels real natural to work with these two groups on the events they do because – you know, they do them really well, but you learn a lot about the history of the places. You learn different techniques on investigation, people going over different theories and stuff, some people showing evidence as well. People like yourself that can do the mediumship and discuss that other realm that a lot of people don't really understand. You know, they're around it, but unless you're experiencing it, it's kind of hard for a lot of people to understand. So they can get that insight from you, and if they do have mediumship, to hear your stories or whoever might be doing the paracon talking about those kind of stories can help them get to that next level or that feeling of confidence, knowing that it's not a weird thing. This is what you're experiencing, and this is what you can do to make it even better. I think that's real important for the people who come to these paracons to really be a part of.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's the learning experience. It's the community that's there, but it's also normalizing it, because all of us have sensitivities. You know, I doubt there's anybody that has not had an experience where they're in a crowd and somebody is looking at them, and they realize somebody is looking at them, and they turn and find that face, you know. Or they go to a friend's house where the two friends that live there have just had an argument. You show up at the door and they open the door and they're acting, you know, like everything is rosy, but you can tell something ain't right in this house. We have these experiences because we all have that sensitivity. Some of us filter it out more than others. Some of us develop it more than others. But you get to these events and you get to hang out with other people. They may not have the exact same kind of gifts or talents, or they may have very much the same. And it's a blast, you know. I was in Virginia City, and there, you know, there's a debate over whether it's the Mackey or the McKee Mansion. I'm going to say it was just the mansion. but we were there. I was out in the back. There's a place that looks out over. It's called, I don't know what they call it, the 100-mile view, I think it's called. And it's just a beautiful view of the mountains. It just stretches for miles and miles. So I was out back in this, you know, kind of side yard area, and there was this dead guy that was leaning on a fence, and he was looking out over the mountains. And so I talked to him for a minute, and he said he was just waiting for his wife to arrive. And I said, you know, you could go to her, you know. And he said, no, she'll be along by and by. I'm fine. This is where she's going to meet me. And this guy had been dead for, like, you know, 100 years. So,
yeah, she was running late.
I just decided that was his gig and not mine. So, you know, he wasn't asking me to do anything. And that's an important part of the deal is, you know, if somebody doesn't want something done, it's not my job to do it. So, but then I had another friend, my friend Ariel, who's very talented, sensitive, and she came out, and we were just standing there. A third friend came out, the leader of my paranormal team, our founder, Melissa, and she just, you know, said, hey, is anything happening? And Ariel described the guy I was looking at and the place he was and what he was doing. And it was so cool to have somebody else seeing exactly what I was seeing. And so that can be one of the real gifts of these paracons, is finding somebody else that has the same thing you have, and all of a sudden you're just somebody that has it like they are, you know, makes it normal. So,
yeah,
but
cool.
It helps to go,
exactly.
You know, the events that Jadeen and Northern Nevada Ghost Hunters do, the events that NorCal paranormal investigators do, it helps to go to good events. So yeah, I've done the Virginia City event with Doug a number of times. I see some of the same people, but it's never the same event because he always finds different places to investigate, and you know, it's really fun. I'm ready to go now.
yeah. What are we waiting
How
for?
Come
yeah.
I have to wait?
Exactly that. But yeah.
So how are things in your paranormal
really
neck of the woods?
Yeah. I wish I lived closer up there, and I'd be there all the time, but it's a pretty long drive for me. But I try to do it every year. That's how dedicated
yeah.
I am to coming up there and seeing everybody doing all this stuff. So I'm real excited.
Well,
it's weird. I'm making that trip pretty much back-to-back because I'm up there one weekend, and then I'm coming back home, and then the following weekend I'm coming right back up. So, should be interesting.
Yeah, I have an advantage over you because it maybe takes me 2 hours to get to Virginia City, but the Jackson ones, I don't know, maybe an hour from my house. Pretty easy drive, so pretty drive too.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's what Jadeen was saying to me too. She's like, yeah, I got Virginia City one way, 45 minutes, and the beach an hour away from me. I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, I can get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
I'm like, of course you do.
It's a good drive, though. I don't mind the drive. Going through the Sierra Nevadas and stuff when it's beautiful outside, it's a good drive. So I don't mind.
It's a little crazy, though. I went up to – Doug had one that – I think he moved it to May the following year, but it was in April one year.
Yeah.
I had to put on chains to get across the Donner Pass.
Yeah, I got stuck at Donner Pass for a while. That was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the guy's like, well, don't you have snow chains? I'm like, dude, I live near the beach. Why would I have snow chains?
Yeah, I had snow chains. I had that going for me, but – I also had a Winona Christmas CD, so we put the chains on, we stuck the Winona Christmas CD on, we sang White Christmas and drove across the Donner Pass in April. It was crazy, but it was beautiful. I'm thinking of taking the train when I go this next time. I haven't firmly decided on that, but I'd like to see the view, you know, taking the train through the Sierra Nevada.
That'd be nice. It'd be a beautiful, beautiful ride, right?
Yeah, I'm hoping. So there's one way to find out. So we'll see.
So, hey, what about your music? What about the stuff you're doing music-wise? I see you have some stuff on Reverb Nation.
Yeah, I have some stuff on Reverb Nation, and I have some stuff on I have some YouTube videos that are up there. If you go to YouTube and you put in David Deerfeeder, then you'll get all kinds of hits for how to build a deer feeder so you can attract deer. You know?
Oh, so really cool.
You kind of got to go through that. You know, if you put in like David Deerfeeder, Hallelujah, you know, then it'll get you to one of my videos and kind of take you from there. But you know, I'm preaching to the choir to say that it's fun to be a musician and a performer. And but what's really been kind of cool for me is in doing this. You know, I've been a touring musician. I've started playing an instrument when I was about 4, and I started guitar at 12. So I've had a lot of adventures that have come to me because of the gifts that music brings. But now I write a lot of songs about my experiences as a medium and my experiences in these haunted places. So it's fun to go to the paranormal conventions. I always make it a point to have a new song so that I'm not going to be doing exactly the same stuff every time. I am a little remiss in getting some of those up on YouTube, but I'll work on that.
Put those up. Just keep putting them up. That sounds cool. People will be into that hearing your stories about that in the song.
Yeah, it's fun. I've always liked the storytelling element of music. I grew up as a folk singer. You know, did a lot of different styles, but that's really the heart of what I do. So, and they say dead men tell no tales, but that's not exactly true. They're telling me lots of tales, so I'm just writing them out, you know?
So, David, when you go to investigations, do you work with a certain team? Do you take equipment with you, or are you just going by what your senses are telling you?
So, I work with a group called Solano County Paranormal because we're in Solano County. It's a clever name, I think.
Easy and catchy.
And I've got some equipment that I do take, not much, but there's rather than using the equipment to perceive if there's something there, somehow some of the equipment seems to help me really tune into it. Like having an antenna, like a laser grid is one of my favorite tools. And it may or may not be because of what I may see in the grid, but it's something about that energy seems to help me tune into things. So I do use some tools from time to time. That may be the way that a spirit is best able to communicate with me. So I want to have whatever is available to them. and I investigate with the team. Our Melissa, as I mentioned, is the founder of it. Then we have Beth and Scott. It's just a four-person team. Occasionally, we expand a little bit with our friends who come into the come in to help us out. But Scott's our technical guy. You know, you got to have a tech guy. So he's got all the cool stuff, the REM pods and the infrared recorders, and you know, and we use that equipment. And then Beth is our case manager. So when people call for an investigation, she's the one that kind of screens everything. She's got a background in criminal justice and worked had an insurance agency, so she's good at asking questions. But my job on the team is more to be there as a sensitive and see what I'm picking up on it. We work, you know, we're a close-knit group, and we work well together. So everybody kind of finds their niche. And like Melissa uses, you know, some of the standard equipment, but she's also started this thing. She's also got a YouTube thing going on called Haunted Urbex, U-R-B-E-X, and it's exploring urban haunted locations. And she and a friend of hers are doing these videos now. And but when we go into an investigation, my role is primarily to be there as a medium and see what I'm picking up.
Because if they're experiencing something, you could validate something on the spot for them.
Yeah. And I think it's important, you know, there are folks that I go out and I do work for individually. But when you walk into some locations, there's strength in numbers, and it's good to have somebody else that's there. Just as a matter of keeping things safe and grounded. Which sounds like kind of a common theme tonight for me about protection, but it's pretty important.
The most important thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because how many times people let their guards down, they get tricked by something, they think it's something else, you know?
Yep. And there's a location that when we start our walks, we start at this place called the Lawler House, and it was a home built in the 1850s. It was a ranch house, and then they moved it in the late 1970s, stuck it on a flatbed truck, then on a barge, and they moved it to this new location in the marina area of this Sassoon City. And the place is it's reputed to have 13 spirits in it. We've had clearly encounters with three of them. We've had EVPs. The very first time we were there, we were doing an EVP session because after we do our tour starts at that location, then we come back to it. And so we have a little bit of time to do an investigation there to close the night out. And first time we were there, we invited the people who were on the tour with us. If they had any questions they wanted to ask during the EVP session, go ahead. And this one lady said, "How many spirits are here?" So I clarified the question, how many spirits are here, not counting us? And there's a woman's voice that you hear right after that. As soon as I say not counting us, there's this voice that says 10. And so
okay.
It was pretty cool. And we've had other EVPs that have come through in this place. There are three spirits, one of whom is a trickster. So we have to be watchful when he's messing around, because he'll show up as somebody else. And some tricksters are very lighthearted and they're just, you know, pranksters. But some tricksters are not lighthearted, and you really got to be on your game and watch out for them.
Yeah, they're always trying to get your guard down and take advantage of you somehow. So, you know.
Yeah.
Especially when you do these investigations and everyone's like, oh, it's just the spirit of a little kid. It's like, oh, really? Yeah, the oldest trick in the book.
Yeah.
You know, you got to really be careful of that.
Yeah, you do have to assume that things may not be as they seem, because if you're even encountering something on a paranormal level, things are not as they seem. It's just like you've already entered into this kind of shadowy place, so pay attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's some wonderful experiences to be had, you know.
David, we only have about 9 minutes left, so if you have something you want to promote or focus on, let's talk a little bit about that. So what's coming up for you in the near future?
Well, the main things that I'm excited about are the things that we've mentioned already, the Motherlode ParaQuest that's coming up in Jackson with NorCal Paranormal Investigators and the Northern Nevada Ghost Hunters Haunted Comstock in the Hills. This time of year gets kind of busy. So, you know, we even have usually this time of year we do like a little gig at our downtown library that I was trying to figure out whether or not I even know the date for that one, but it usually shows up. For me, I pretty much take what's showing up. I, you know, have gotten some increased calls to do one-on-one work. And I'm looking at what I can do to take care of that. I do psychometry, where you hold an object and pick up on whatever's happening. And I'll probably look for some opportunities to do some psychometry work with people, maybe some gallery work. But the two big things for me are these two investigations that are quickly going to be right around the corner, end of October, beginning of September. So,
uh-huh.
Or beginning of November, excuse me. The problem is there's
the
too many of them out there. And
if you do the psychometry stuff, you like touch some of the stuff that's actually in the mines or whatever they used back in those times. I'm curious what you'd be picking up in that.
There have been, sometimes it's very confusing because I might hold something that a number of people have held, and I'll pick up a little bit from everybody. If I'm doing the psychometry for an individual that's asked me to do it, I ask them to bring me something that either belonged to the person that they wanted to contact, but that was not like an estate piece, you know. One woman, I asked, you know, if she had a ring, and she said, yeah. And I said, you know, it needs to be one that you bought new, because I don't want to pick up on somebody else's grandmother's ring that you bought at an estate. So she brought me this ring and said she bought it new. I held the ring and I told her, man, I'm on the beach in Cancun. You know, this is interesting. And she said, yeah, I bought it in Cancun
cool.
when I was there on vacation. When I've done the haunted locations, sometimes I do use the psychometry to try to get more in touch with what I'm witnessing. The Donovan Mill at Gold Hill outside of Virginia City, I encountered a guy there that was pretty much sold his soul. You know, he didn't want to exist anymore. And it was a real weird thing. It's hard to describe encountering someone who was not there. And even by my standards, it was weird. But one of the things I could do in that room was go around and touch some of the older objects in the room just to get a clearer picture of what was going on at the time this guy was around. So it can be a little confusing sometimes, and other times it can bring a lot of clarity. Whatever I get, I just tell people what I'm getting. I don't filter it.
Wow. That is interesting. Just as, like you said, you know, someone who didn't want to be there. So we're dealing with a lot of energies in spirits. We're dealing with some type of positive physical energy. The opposite of that would be almost like a negative indent of matter. So that's got to be really weird to kind of work with.
Yeah, it was confusing for me. And
yeah.
I wound up writing a song about things once I figured it out. So, you know, I'll be doing that at these shows. But I had just never encountered the absence of a spirit where it kind of left a hole. So, you know, just
interesting.
But, you know, there was a time I had not encountered elementals either. And the first time I got to a place where there was some kind of entity that was there that was, you know, operating on this really primitive level, it was a brand new ball game. But fortunately, I had a friend who was a pagan priest, and I just said, "You got to tell me what to do here." You know, like, I'm out of my specialty.
They're cool. They're big too. They're really big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spirits and stuff, elementals. Yeah, they're doing their own job, their own thing. So it's kind of interesting. It just shows you the expansive world of so many different things that are happening. It's amazing.
Yeah, we live in an incredibly diverse multiverse, you know. And I really dig the mystery of it. If you're going to do the paranormal work or whatever way you're going to do it, you better be able to live with mystery, you know, because it's not real good for the black and white thinkers. You know, they're going to be kind of disappointed or confused, you know.
Absolutely. All right. Well, David, we're coming to the end of the show. We're going to have to wrap. Thanks for spending some time with us. And, you know, once again, looking forward to see you up north in a few weeks. It's going to be a really good time. Can't wait.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, too. Maybe at one of these two, we can have a little jam session.
Well, I think I'm going to bring my guitar up, so we'll jam out a little bit when I come up there.
Okay, cool. I'll look forward to it, my friend.
Yeah, I'm just bringing my acoustic, though. I'm not bringing my electric, though. I'm not going to be bringing stacks and stuff like that.
Yeah, we'll be unplugged.
Awesome, man. All right. Thank you so much, buddy. I'm looking forward to seeing you. I'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye. Thanks for the invite.
All right. Bye now. And that's going to be it for tonight's show right here. You're listening to My Darkest Hour Radio right here at LiveParanormal.com and History FM Radio. Thank you so much for spending time with us. I want to give a shout-out to my sponsors, Chili Man Salsa Company, C-H-I-L-I-I-M-A-N. Remember, C-H-I-L-I-I-M-A-N, salsa company, for the paranormally hot salsa. Really good stuff. I love it. Got cases of it. Can't live without it. Lizzie Woozy's Crafty Creations. Liz Johnson out there making some of the nice wares and the stuff to keep us warm, to keep us safe when we're out in those paranormal environments and exposing ourselves to the elements. Also want to give a shout-out to P-Tech, Paranormal Technologies. All the great lights and the mediums that we use to keep us focusing and doing our investigations in the dark. So that's going to be it. Thanks, everybody. LiveParanormal.com, Ministry FM Radio. Thanks for all the mediators in the chat rooms and everyone that makes it happen. We will see you in the next episode of My Darkest Hour. In the meantime, have a good evening.
This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox Sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and
you are listening to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Bregotti on LiveParanormal.com.